When one door closes, another one opens. As refugees from Laos, Sai and Nong Sayasom were resettled in the Midwest, where they quickly went to work, toiling in meatpacking plants in an effort to give their children a better life. Jackie would take advantage of that opportunity and go on to be a college athlete. But just as Jackie's college soccer career was taking off, she was diagnosed with a blood disorder that abruptly ended her dream and sent her into depression. Jackie would battle back by finding ways to support the team from the sidelines, and a few years later, would stumble onto a new sport, cornhole. After 5 months of training and competing in various tournaments, Jackie signed her first contract and realized her dream of becoming a pro athlete. Jackie now travels the country, competing in tournaments in front of fans on ESPN and NBC, but hasn't forgotten where she came from. She enjoys giving back to less fortunate people and animals of Laos, and is currently building a shelter for stray dogs and cats in her ancestral homeland. So, let's kick it off.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of C4 Podcast, Southeast Asian Athlete Achievement Through Adversity. My name is Coach Andetka. If you haven't already, please like and share our page, Loud American Sports, and C4 Podcast on Facebook and IG. So I'm here with my co-host, John Messina, and we have a wonderful guest on today, and I'm going to have John go ahead and introduce our guest.
Yeah, we're excited today. We have Jackie Sayasom, a.k.a. J-Say, who is a professional cornhole player. I personally didn't know there was a professional league until recently, but I have played it many a time in the backyard, usually with too many beverages, but that's another story. So before we get into the interview, we wanted to give a quick shout out to our friends over at Lao Lessons. They've supported the Lao American Sports Hall of Fame and the C4 podcast from the beginning. So whether you're a beginner looking to learn Lao or someone who wants to take it to the next level, check out laolessons.com or follow Lao Lessons on Instagram. So with that, Jackie, tell us, before we even get into the interview, in case people don't know what cornhole is, tell us, what exactly is cornhole?
So cornhole is basically two boards with holes with a hole in it. It's a 2x4 board with 27 feet distance from front to front. And then basically you have a cornhole bag, which is filled with plastic resin beads. And you just slide into the hole for 3 points or on the board for one. So it's a pretty fun yard game. Anyone can play, anyone can win. It's a game anyone can pick up really at any age.
Yeah. So for those of you from the West Coast, it used to be called bags or beanbag toss. Out here in the Midwest, it is more known as cornhole. I have family in Ohio, and I came out to visit them like maybe 20 years ago, and they said, this is cornhole. I said, no, it's bags. And anyway, but now most people know it as cornhole, and we're lucky to have Jackie, who's an ACL, American Cornhole League pro. So Jackie, before we get into more about your professional career, tell us a little bit about your family. Your family comes from Laos. You grew up in Nebraska, the Sioux City, Iowa area. Tell us how they got there, what you know about their background.
So my parents were staying at a refugee camp in Nong Khai, Thailand. When a church from Des Moines, Iowa had sponsored them to the States in 1982. My dad had like $2 in his pocket, packed my mom and my eldest sister who just turned one in hopes of finding like a better future. My dad worked as a dishwasher and cook while my mom was a housekeeper. And they eventually settled in South City, Nebraska, where they were able to find higher paying jobs at a meatpacking plant.
So you were born in the U.S. But your sister was born in Laos.
My eldest sister was, yes. I have three older sisters. So the other two were born here in the States. I was born in the States as well.
Oh gosh. Okay.
Okay. So my wife was in Nong Khai. Probably they came in 1981, but was in Nong Khai like in say 78, 79, 80-ish, 81, like around that time. She was a young child. It's so many of our guests were in that camp at the same time that have been on this show. So it's just kind of an interesting fact. And their family came over. Yeah, their family also came over, was sponsored by Catholic Family Charities, and then went to the meatpacking industry in Amarillo, Texas, because it paid a lot of money at the time and you didn't need to speak English. Well, that's exciting. So Well, tell us about you. You were born there in the Sioux City area, Nebraska side of the border. What was your childhood like, and how did you get involved in athletics?
I had a great childhood. I had three little sisters that had been through it all before me, so it was easy for me seeing them get through everything. They all did really well with academics, and I had sisters to fall back on when I needed help. So I really didn't even notice that we didn't have much growing up, because my parents did a good job, like, keeping food on the table, and they taught us to work hard for anything we wanted instead of things being handed to us. My parents were very strict, and we had chores for allowances. We all got jobs as soon as we were old enough. Getting a job at 14 was when it kind of helped me pay for the sports camp. So I was able to attend the sports camp. And then as far as my involvement with sports, I loved every sport that I was introduced to. So I was very active and always trying to better myself from learning from all the sports.
What was your favorite sport?
I probably would say basketball was probably my favorite sport playing while I was growing up. So I'm only 5'2", but I mean, soccer was my best option, getting a scholarship to go play in college. So that's why I just kind of stuck with that. But I mean, I really loved like playing anything. Like, you could put me in anything and I'd put so much dedication into it every single time.
But also naturally gifted, right?
It just having that drive and that competitive attitude, and
nothing wrong with that. Yeah. I love hearing that, because I come from a generation where we didn't focus on athletics. It was just like, it was education, you know. So athletics were kind of like, you know, almost like forbidden or you looked down upon. Oh yeah, right?
That's so how it was, because like my sisters, yeah, they're all like, you know, because I mean, they were just doing so well in academics. I didn't do bad in academics. It just like, I just put more into sports than academics, but yeah. It was just like, it was so nice because my sisters were there to like tutor me the whole entire way while I was like still involved in sports. So I was kind of lucky to have that in my corner when most law families, I know it was a struggle for them to get help from like their parents or their older siblings or something, because it was kind of hard for them with the law English languages and not understanding everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. Well, I mean, you're kind of underestimating yourself here, because I think it's something like 2% of high school athletes go on to play in college, and you were one of those, and you did it in soccer. Tell us a little bit about that, maybe the recruiting process, how you selected the school you went to, and your college career.
So yeah, it was, you know, I always wanted to go to like a big school, but I knew like being able to afford it was really hard. So I kind of just stuck around home and just figured I'd stick to a small college for now, and then just kind of just work my way that way. But it was intense when I chose Briarcliff University. It was still pretty intense. I wasn't used to being on the team with tremendous athletes. So everybody on the team was the best from our high school. So it was so competitive, and there was just so much talent from every player. It definitely helped me push through to work harder. But after I played for the 4 years of soccer, I also ended up joining the tennis team and ended up playing. I was a double sport in college, so I thought tennis was a little bit, it was a game that I just kind of picked up with my dad, that I played at the gym, and the tennis coach had saw me playing tennis, and they needed players, and like, hey, well, will you come play and we'll give you a scholarship? So I ended up doing that for 2 years, and then I finished soccer for all 4 years.
Okay. Awesome. Wow. So, you know, tell us, because you were a huge athlete, college athlete and everything, and then at some point you were diagnosed with thalassemia, and I'll explain what that is to the audience, because a lot of people don't know. A lot of people may have heard sickle cell anemia, which is very common in people from Africa, West African descent, and it's common in the U.S. just because of the large population of people with ancestry there. But there's another kind of quasi-similar disorder that's common in, they call it the thalassemia belt, and it runs from the Mediterranean, like Greece and Italy, across the Middle East, India, and right into Thailand and Laos. And ironically, I'll just tell you my own personal story with it. When I was a child, and my family is from Sicily, by the way, from one of the regions with the highest concentration in the world. I had exhibited some symptoms as a young child, and this was back in the 80s. So they sent me, I was living in San Francisco, sent us down to Stanford University Medical Center, the biggest, best, most sophisticated place in the Bay Area. And fortunately, I only had the minor version, which means I could pretty much lead an active life. But they told my parents, there's a chance I'll never be able to play sports. I had the minor version. And, you know, as I got older, I did a little research on it, and I found out there's two very high concentrations, one in Sicily, where my family's from, and one in Northeast Thailand and Laos, where my wife happens to be from, and where Jaysay traces her ancestry. So Jaysay, tell us how, you know, that upended your athletic career.
Well, I thought I was out of shape, honestly. We had 2 to 3 practices a day. I wasn't used to being the last one to finish my drills. And so I felt like I was out of shape. It was hard for me to breathe. And I was getting a lot of chest pains. I thought I was out of shape, so I would go to the gym after practice, after practicing two, three times a day. And I would go to the gym, practice, work out more. Then one day I started getting really bad chest pains, and it was really hard for me to breathe. And so I was actually diagnosed with E beta thalassemia, which is one of the worst kinds of thalassemia. That was my freshman year of college. So they told me I need to take it easy or my organs would fail, because it wasn't getting enough oxygen that it needed to my organs. So after finding that out, I thought my dreams of being a pro athlete was done for sure. I finally accepted that I would no longer be able to push my body. So I just accepted it, and I just tried to stay active as much as I could. Just because that's just how my whole lifestyle was growing up, which is playing sports and everything, and it was just kind of hard, like, taking that all away after finding that out. So yeah, it was really difficult to find that out.
Tell us a little bit more about, like, again the podcast focuses on adversity, right? So what were you going through, like, you know, mentally? I mean, like you said, you had to accept that, you know, that you had to, like, back away. Like, how did you deal with it? What type of support, you know, support? You obviously probably got, you know, support from your family, but how did you know, yourself deal with it?
Yeah, I actually went through a whole phase of depression during college because of that. So it was just hard being on the sidelines, but I was just like, hey, I was cheering everybody on, just like, you know, like, when they were complaining about practice, I'm like, I wish I was out there. I wish I was able to run just like you guys and stuff. But having to put limits on my playing time and at practice, it was just difficult to, I felt like I wasn't working as hard, but my body was overworking already. So everything was just mentally draining, but it was just, it made me thankful that I was still able to do some of the things, and still able to run on the field and pick up tennis halfway of college and play that, because it was less endurance, but it was definitely still a challenge and everything. But I finally came to accept it, and I just, you know, it wasn't for me, it wasn't meant to be. So that's what I was thinking the whole time, but I just came to accept it and overcame it. But I was still had pretty good sportsmanship for everybody and just showed them on the whole way.
That's an amazing attitude, you know, especially having I know when I got into my depression, I just kind of went into a deep hole, and it got very dark and got very lonely. And, you know, they say sometimes the best attitude is gratitude, you know, so you just being thankful that you can cheer on your teammates and being out there, that is probably, you know, one of the, you know, avenues to go, you know, to go about, versus, like, with me, I went into, like, a dark hole. And, you know, and I know it was hard, very hard to get out for. And, and again, my generation, everybody being older, like, we don't do well with depression. Like it's not even talked about, right? There's no such thing as depression. You just, like, it's all in your mind, which it is. It is all in your mind. So I commend you for, like, going through what you did and getting out on the other end, you know, so that's great. That's great to hear.
Yeah. I mean,
it was kind of nice to use, like, you know, like, because I still saw things that a lot of players didn't see. So it was just kind of like a more of a coaching standpoint versus playing. So it was just kind of nice, like, hey, like, do this, do that, or just, you know, yelling at them. So it just kind of, it was nice. I mean, I never thought that I would coach, but then I ended up being a sports performance coach. But I just loved it, you know, just specializing workouts for players and, you know, helping them overcome their injuries and, you know, the rehab that they had to do with their ACL tears or, you know, MCL tears and stuff. And it was just, that's how I found the love for the game. So it was just still sticking around and just helping out in a different way, even though I couldn't contribute in a game.
Yeah,
no, that's incredible because, you know, like I said, I'll probably get the statistic wrong. Somewhere in the 2-5% of high school athletes can make it to the college level. So to work so hard to get there, you're like, I made it. And then all of a sudden it's the rug is pulled out from under you. Right, Jay? So to recover from that and also to not give up on the team, stand by the team, right? Do your part, whatever that is, even if it is limited playtime, right? Because you can't push yourself with thalassemia to the, you know, the coaches will say, come on, push harder, harder. There's a limit with thalassemia just because your body will be deprived of oxygen. So, but that is, that is really incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you wrapped up your college career and you found a very interesting route back into athletics and all the way to the pros. Yes. So your dream did come true, but in a strange and obscure way. How did you get, first of all, into cornhole and then walk us into your career and turning it pro?
So I was actually like an active stand volleyball player. I played in competitive leagues two to four times a week, and I couldn't get enough of it. You know, it was a guy on my team that just randomly asked me, he's like, hey, you want to play in this cornhole league? And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll play with you. And so the first week we got there, we were playing, and we just got our butts whooped. It was bad, and I noticed everyone had their, like, you know, a spin to their bag, and we're just like bunching up the bags and just throwing it, and it just wasn't staying on the board, and everybody was just like, you know, nice spin, just staying on the board and everything. And I was just like, I hated sucking. And I saw people bring their own bags, and I was actually making fun of them. I was like, they brought their own bags, and I was like, how much do you buy those bags for? And I would just giggle, you know, on the side and stuff. And then I just hated sucking so bad that I ended up buying my own set of bags. And so for a week straight, I was like, I'm going to get the spin down. I'm going to figure this out. So I went to the brewery every day, and I set up boards, and I just threw for a week straight. And so they opened to close, and I had a buddy that threw with me, and, you know, I just figured it out on my own. And finally, when I figured it out on my own, I came back a week later, and I was just a whole nother player. And I was actually winning games now and stuff, and just within a week. And then so after that, like, I think 3 months in, I went out to the world championships in King of Prussia and in Pennsylvania. And I went and competed out there, and I just, I played my heart out. I didn't know anyone. So I think that's why there wasn't like pressure on me. I didn't know any pros. I didn't know, you know, anything about the league. I just was in it 3 months in, and I didn't do bad though. So, you know, 2 months later after the world championships, I got invited to sign my pro contract. And so I really just signed my pro contract after playing for 5 months. And it was just, I was just like kind of, you know, stoked that, like, hey, I became a pro athlete. Like, that's what I always wanted to do. And it was a game that was easy to pick up and just kind of something that I just, you know, it's like a strategy, but it wasn't like too much endurance, and it's just a 1 pound bag thrown 27 feet. So yeah, it wasn't bad at all.
That's awesome. That's awesome. 5 months, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit more. Is it like when you're in a competition, is it like you one-on-one against another person, or is it like a group that plays all together, or?
So there's like a doubles and there's singles. Those are like the main ones that you'll play, is doubles or singles. And then so pretty much it's mostly open. So it doesn't really matter about sex, but then there's also like women's doubles, or there's co-ed doubles, or there's crew cup, which is four players per team. So it's basically like two players on both sides. And so you're throwing either bag one and three or bag two and four. So it's basically you're just competing against another group of four, and it's called crew cup. And then we sometimes we'll do like a, like something like a slider cup, where it's like a team type thing, which is not really like a tournament thing, but you do like you kind of just see who wins which one. So like crew cup, singles, doubles. So it just really depends what kind of tournament you go into, but like mainly it is just doubles and singles for the most part.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you consider some of your top accomplishments in the sport so far?
So my top accomplishments would probably include like my NBC sports broadcast representing the world team as Team Laos for the USA Open Championships, which was earlier this year. And then I placed second or took silver for the USA National Championships in women's doubles in 2020. And then I'd say on my ESPN broadcast, which was making the top eight men and women for the ESPN Pro Invitational in 2021. And then I got second in my bracket, third overall in the women's doubles at the ASL World Championships in 2020. And then I got third in women doubles at the 2020 kickoff battle national. And then another big accomplishment, which was my first ESPN broadcast, I got fifth in open doubles at the ACL Pro Qualifier in Galveston, which was very it was really random. Like my partner had backed out, and there was another kid that needed a partner too, and so we kind of decided to play with each other like 26 hours before the actual tournament. And it was just kind of crazy that we, you know, we're both rookies and we end up making that ESPN broadcast and end up, you know, we never played with each other, never met each other, never threw each other's bags. We threw different bags, but it just worked out for us. We just had that good vibe and that, you know, good chemistry, and it just kind of clicked. And then we end up, you know, doing pretty well. And that just kind of just built up a lot of confidence to keep trying to make those broadcasts and just keep trying to come up and try to be on top of the nation. So yeah, it was a pretty good one to make for sure.
Could you tell our viewers, and I would like to know as well, like where we could see clips of the NBC broadcast, the ESPN broadcast, how do we like see videos or like broadcasts of this? Like, would they have them on ESPN2 or NBC?
I know I watched them like on the ESPN. I don't know how long the video stayed there, but I know it was still on ESPN. If you look up like Johnsonville Cornhole Championships, or I know a lot of them were still on there. Otherwise, at the American Cornhole League on Facebook, on their videos, they have a lot of live feeds that was on broadcast. And then also the ACL Digital Network, they have every single game on there that's not even on broadcast, that's on there too. So that's another good channel to find the games on, and sometimes they're on YouTube as well.
Yeah, I got to check it out. We definitely got to check that out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I've got to imagine, you know, at that level, it's more than just sinking the bag into the hole, because I'm guessing at the pro level, almost everybody could get it in the, like, throw it into the hole. Tell us maybe for our listeners who are going to their next backyard barbecue or tailgate this weekend, what give us a few strategy tips.
So the first step I will start with is to get your bag flat. Once you get your bag flat, like, it doesn't matter if you hit the board or not, just try to get that flat throw. Once you get that flat throw, you have control of everything on the board. So then once you hit that flat bag on the board, then you'll be able to slide or, you know, block and then push through your bags or just bully other bags around. Then once you get more into it, you know, you'll be hitting those air mails, which is just shooting it straight into the hole, not touching the board. Or wow. there's rollers where they'll just, or bounces where they'll just bounce over the bag, or they'll just roll over the bag. And a lot of people do have like pretty bounce roll bags, because it just kind of rolls over like a little cartwheel. It's just crazy like what you can do with a cornhole bag with the resin beads in there. So yeah, it just but the best way is just getting your bag flat and just put every single bag in the hole.
Awesome. Well, what's next for Jackie here? Any big tournaments? Where are you taking your pro career from here?
From here, yeah. I don't know what You mean like as in the future?
Yeah, what's the future hold for you?
Okay, so
you have a goal or is there some big event coming up or anything like that?
Yeah, I do have events coming up. I'm actually playing Illinois this next weekend, but then this upcoming weekend I'll be playing a regional, but then the next one will be an open in Quad Cities. But like honestly, I don't even know what tomorrow holds, so I'm just trying to take one day, one game at a time and trying to keep focused on my goals. The only plans I have for the future is building a sanctuary for cats and dogs in Laos, which is already in the process. As for cornhole, I know I want a world title. I want to be a part of the Olympic team once that's said and done. And then this will all really be up to me with how laser focused I can stay. And I just need to keep my health in check and mentally and physically to be able to do all those things. And those are the goals I'm trying to reach for sure. But as far as future holds for me, I don't know. But I guess I'm excited to find out though. So yeah, just taking it one day at a time.
That's a great attitude. That's a great attitude. Mm-hmm. It's simple, right? Sometimes you start thinking 5 years away or 10 years away, and then you lose sight of where you're at and you don't enjoy it or you take it for granted.
Well, we would love to hear.
I had no idea this was in my back, you know, like I had no idea I was ever going to be a cornhole player. Like I said, I walked into the game, I was laughing at other players that brought in their own bags, and now that's me. You know, that's me. I'm bringing my own bags to tournaments and stuff. And
you're playing college soccer 1 minute, the next you're a cornhole pro. I mean, it's not what everybody thinks is going to happen. Well, I'd love to hear a little bit about the shelter in Laos that you're sponsoring or supporting.
Mm-hmm. So I just right before COVID started, I actually got land in Kintao, which is like right along the Mekong River between Thailand and Laos. So I just got land out there and I got like electricity poles up so far. But since COVID, we weren't able to go back to Laos till just a few months ago. So I'm actually planning to go back out in February to do my floor plan and everything, just because I'm a huge animal lover. I love animals. I help with rescues here on my free time. And I just, you know, out there, and I know that it's kind of poor out there and the cats and dogs can really use help. So I'm just trying to go out there and kind of help the population slow down a little bit. And I just want, my goal is just to get them the medical attention and then stay neuter and then just kind of release them back in a safe sanctuary where they'll be fed and just, you know, free land to just roam around.
We've been hearing that a lot amongst like the Hall of Famers and some of our guests on the podcast about going back to Laos, just giving back, you know, because we are given an opportunity that they weren't given, you know, like we given the opportunity to succeed, and like nothing, you know, nothing better than going back and like just, you know, giving back, right? You know, sometimes better than giving is better than receiving, right? Sounds like a cliche, but you know, in a way it is. You know,
it's a good feeling, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even just going to the schools, like just having like a bag of candy where I just passed out to all the kids, it was just that feeling, you know, they're so ecstatic and stoked for it. It's just crazy. Like, you know, you're taking so many things for granted here. So just, I love going back home, like, you know, back to Laos and just, you know, giving back to everybody and just kind of just sharing everything what I accomplished and just hopefully bring cornhole for the kids and everyone there just to start playing. So that's what my goal is, just to, you know, start that sanctuary and get cornhole out there and still represent Laos and, you know, the world team and but still play for USA at the same time. So it's kind of nice I'm able to represent both.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm gonna have to stay in touch with you and like get like you know, when the best time to go to Laos and like when airfares are like dropping, you know. So
it's pretty good right now. You should go back in February. That's when because I mean, tickets are pretty good right now, and that's why we plan to go back in February for sure.
And you go straight to Laos? You don't go through Bangkok, through Thailand, and then like, you can actually go?
You got to connect either through Korea, Thailand, somewhere. There's no direct from here to Laos. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So well, have you been back home yet?
I was back home probably before you were born, and that was like 1990. So,
really?
Yeah.
I try to go back like every year, but just since COVID, I just haven't been back. But I love it out there, though. Like,
that's
I
so
like
interesting
not...
here. Like, that's so interesting here, especially from someone that's younger, just, you know, to want to, you know, get back there and do what you're doing. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it out there. I mean, I love my family out there. I love, like, just, you know, like, I learned a lot from out there. So that's why it's kind of nice.
You still have family back in Laos?
Oh, yeah. Like, yep. So my mom and dad's entire family is, like, over there pretty much. My dad has a younger sister and brother that are here in the States, but my mom's entire family is still over there, and the rest of my dad's family is still over there.
Okay. Well, that's good. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's cool to have family back there. Yeah.
I keep in touch with them, and then my seal, who used to live here in the States, she just recently went back to Sinyat Bui, so I keep in touch with her a lot too, and so I'll be actually spending time with her and then with my family, so just like kind of splitting the time, 2 weeks with her and then 2 weeks with my family.
And like then, in Vientiane mostly? Like, is that where? It seems like everybody's from Vientiane. Why?
my parents are from Gentao. So that's like right next to Thailand. So it's even like Thai currency where my parents are. And then so my seo, she's from Sinyat Bali, or where she lives in Sinyat Bali right now. But so it's just like 2-3 hours away from each other.
Okay.
So she's like more in the bigger city, but my parents are, it's not really a touristy area where my parents are from. It just, I mean, even like when I was over there and I was, you know, riding a bike down the street, I even heard everyone said, you know, like, Plang Noi Ki Lo Teep, like just, you know, riding down the street, everyone just came out, had a watch and just, you know, like, oh yeah, the American girl, you know, is riding her bike down the street. Like, so everyone just comes out and just watches me, or there's a lot of random people that came up and asked me just to take picture with them. But it was just like,
cool.
I mean, at that time I wasn't even like a pro athlete or anything. So it was just kind of nice because, I mean, it was nice for them to see someone that wasn't just like from there, you know. It was just kind of like, just because it's not towards the area, so they're just telling me like, oh, please bring your friends, we want to see them. And you know, they're just really curious. And but it's still like, I like the small town, but I like the small town a little bit more than the big towns. But is this, you know, it's where my parents are from, so that's why I love it, I guess.
Is it north south where of Vientiane? It's north, right? Is that the town where they're from, you know, relative to Vientiane, just so everybody.
It's so, you know where Chiang Mai is in Thailand? So it's just
it's north, right? North. Yeah, it's north, kind of up around the corner. Yeah. That's where I thought it was. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's just right along the Mekong River.
Yeah.
So it's just
I know where it is. I've been right down that area. And speaking of, you know, I walked onto the high school campus of my wife's cousin. She brought us over there to watch a soccer game. And I might as well have been Michael Jordan, because like the whole school came out, the principal shook my hand. He said, everybody, we have a special guest. And then everywhere I walked, I heard Falong, 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 Falong. it was funny, but yeah, that's a beautiful area there, up there along the river for sure. So, well,
yeah,
good.
You go to Gintau, you just feel like a celebrity over there.
Yep. For sure.
Where are you coming out, just taking pictures with you, just, you know, because they just don't get to see it that often. So it just, it's not as developed as like Vientiane or like, you know, Sinyat, but it's still very open fire and all that stuff over there right now too.
Yeah. I'll hopefully be in Vientiane in May. There's some things we're working on that may be over there in May for the first time in Vientiane, which will be great. And that's where my wife was born, Vientiane, actually. Well, with that, Jackie, what advice do you have for those who are facing some sort of adversity similar to you, but have a dream or passion they want to follow?
I would say to always keep pursuing your passion no matter what. Don't be discouraged if you have setbacks. If you have to work a side job to pay for your passion until you take off, you know, restart, refocus as many times as you need to. Just don't quit, because hard work and dedication always will win.
That's great.
That's great. Now, one last thing. Any advice you want to give in Lao language? If you're able. We had our last guest gave some advice in Lao language, right? Own Scoggins.
You know.
We don't want to put you on the spot. We understand. So anyway.
Sorry.
Great. Well, hey, this was a great interview. We appreciate you opening up about your battle with thalassemia, because not everybody's comfortable talking about that. But I think by you talking about it, other people who are going through something similar, right, it makes them feel a little better and more open about it as well. So thank you for that, for sure. And thanks for coming on. Co, any last thoughts?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, you know what? My last thought is, like this summer, I was playing like bags with my kids, you know, in the backyard. I didn't even know it was called corn. And here I am today talking to a cornhole pro, you know, so that's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah.
You know, there's a ton of those kids. They're dominating right now. They're so good. It's the sport's changing so fast. So many different bag companies now, like these little kids, like they young kids, like 10-year-olds, and they're actually dominating the courts right now. They're just, they don't have no worries, no bills, nothing. And there's great opportunities for the kids to even play in the sport because they can win scholarships and everything. And you don't have to play in college, but you can play for a college scholarship. And it just kind of, you know, it's kind of something to keep them out of trouble too. And it's an addicting game. So it's good to for all ages. And watching all the kids come up is making this sport a lot harder to stay on the pro roster for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And just for everybody, follow Jackie on Instagram, right? Jackie Siasone on there, Jackie Siasone Cornhole ACL Pro, I believe, on Facebook. Give her a follow. And if you have a company or anything like that and you're looking to sponsor a pro athlete, Jackie is certainly interested in hearing from you folks.
Yep, for sure. We got a new season going, so I just looking for four more on my jersey. And if you're looking to sponsor, just hit me up.
She's got space on the jersey, everybody. All right, thanks, Jackie, so much.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. So this wraps up another episode of C4 Podcast. Again, please like and share and follow us. And, John, you got any last words for our guests?
That's it. Appreciate it, Jackie. Have a good night.
All right.
You too, Jay. Bye.
The C4 Podcast is brought to you by the Lao American Sports Hall of Fame. Visit us on the web at laoamericansports.com. Celebrating the first, inspiring the next.